Right now, we need to focus more on what happens inside the buildings than what's happening on the outsides of the buildings.
The Senate votes to halt new state spending on school bonds. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, March 25th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, protecting your identity after the extensive Primera Alaska data breach.
Now that this information is out there, just because it hasn't been used today doesn't mean that it won't be used tomorrow.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Wells Fargo, extending its support of Alaska residents beyond banking by supporting the programming of public radio throughout Alaska, giving back to the community. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far. The Medallion Foundation and Federal Aviation Administration set standards for the operation of aircraft and airports. More information at faa.gov/go/flyalaska. This message is sponsored by the Medallion Foundation.
The Alaska Senate has passed a bill that would stop state reimbursement of new school bonds, including ones that are currently being considered in Anchorage. Right now, the state covers up to 70% of the cost of school construction bonds issued by municipalities. But with the state facing a multi-billion dollar deficit, legislators are wary of taking on additional obligations. The legislation sunsets the school debt program for 5 years, at which point the program would be brought back with a lower reimbursement level. Senator Anna McKinnon, an Anchorage Republican, carried the bill on the floor today.
This is not about punishment. This is about trying to control our costs as a state. I believe that the people of Alaska know that the state cannot afford to make the payments. We certainly can't afford to take on increased debt.
While the bill passed 17-2, there was some opposition from Anchorage Democrats because of the timing of the bill. The legislation would retroactively sunset the program to January 1st. But right now, Anchorage voters are already casting ballots on a $60 million school bond question. Senator Bill Willikowski argued that the legislature was trying to rush the bill through because of Anchorage's municipal election.
They're voting based on 22 years of 100% reimbursement, 35 plus years of state reimbursing some percentage. And so the people in my community are out and voting. And this is what they're voting on. This is what the state's told them. And so this causes all kinds of confusion in the election in Anchorage. And I think it's unfair.
Willikowski added that the program would amount to a property tax increase of $30 for the average home in Anchorage. Anchorage Democrat Berta Gardner also expressed concern over the legislation, but ultimately voted for it.
While our children certainly need safe and comfortable school buildings for learnings to take place, I think at this time, right now, we need to focus more on what happens inside the buildings than what's happening on the outsides of the buildings.
The bill will now be considered by the House. When the Alaska Senate votes on its primary marijuana bill on Friday, the version they will consider treats marijuana as a controlled substance. The body voted 16-4 today to adopt a version that keeps marijuana listed as a drug that can be abused instead of a version that removed that language from the books. A block of Democrats opposed the move, arguing that it went against the will of the voters, which was to treat the drug like alcohol. But supporters of the adopted version noted that marijuana is still considered a controlled substance at the federal level. Alaska Congressman Don Young has co-sponsored a bill to end the federal ban on medical marijuana in states that have chosen to make it legal. The bill would also allow VA doctors to recommend marijuana use to their patients and require the government to start issuing marijuana research licenses. Young said in a written statement that he considers both medical and recreational marijuana a matter of states' rights. The legislation could give marijuana entrepreneurs an alternative to operating in an all cash environment. In states that allow marijuana commerce, the bill would allow those businesses to use banks without subjecting the banks to charges of money laundering. Alaska is participating in a multi-state investigation into Primera following a cyber attack on the health insurance company early this year. The state's insurance director says she has a lot of questions about why the attack occurred and why it took the company 2 months to announce it publicly. Identity theft experts say the fact that the breach includes Social Security numbers makes it especially troubling. APRN's Annie Feit reports.
Washington State's insurance commissioner is taking the lead in the investigation into Primera. 6 million customers were affected in Washington. In Alaska, the attack exposed the personal data of 700,000 current and former members of Primera, dating back to 2002. The information includes Social Security numbers, date of birth, addresses, and some bank account numbers.
There was an incredible amount of personal data that was released in this breach.
Lori Wing Heyer directs the state's Division of Insurance. She says even though Washington State is leading the investigation, Alaska will have just as much control over how it's conducted. She's working with the state's Department of Law to help determine the scope of the investigation into the data breach.
It occurred in May of 2014. It wasn't noted until January 2015, and it wasn't reported to the regulators until March of 2015. So that is basically what the examination will focus on. We'll be looking for what procedures they had in place and what happened during that time frame.
Wing Heyer is especially concerned about the two-month gap between when the company discovered the attack and when Primera made it public. The company says it needed to cleanse and secure its IT systems prior to making an announcement to prevent the attackers from engaging in more malicious activity. Wing Heyer isn't satisfied with that explanation.
We want a better answer. We want a better understanding of what happened.
Primera spokesperson Eric Erling says he looks forward to working with state insurance regulators on their investigation. The company is also coordinating with the FBI. Erling says there's no evidence any of the personal data has been used.
And so that is a difference than some major national retailers when they've had these sorts of experiences with a cyber attack, have experienced personal information being used in a fraudulent way right after the attack, and that's not been the experience in this case.
The company is offering free credit monitoring for 2 years to affected customers. Eva Velasquez is president of the Identity Theft Resource Center, a California-based nonprofit. She says it's important for current and former Primera customers to take advantage of the credit monitoring program.
Now that this information is out there, just because it hasn't been used today doesn't mean that it won't be used tomorrow.
Velasquez says not all data breaches are created equal. Thieves stole credit card data in recent cyber attacks on big retailers like Target and Home Depot. That can be a hassle for consumers, but as soon as you cancel your credit card and open a new one, that threat is over. Velasquez says, in contrast, Social Security numbers are a treasure trove for thieves.
Your payment card data information is not a personal identifier for you. It doesn't follow you around for the rest of your life. You know, your Social Security number and your fingerprints do. So it's much harder to change that. You can't get rid of those things. Now you just have to monitor those things.
Velasquez recommends Primera customers continue to monitor their credit for the rest of their lives. And she says there are a lot of free resources available. Alaska is also participating in a multi-state investigation of Anthem, another Blue Cross Blue Shield insurance company that experienced a data breach the same week as Primera. Lori Wing Heyer says that the state has 34,000 customers affected by that breach. In Anchorage, I'm Annie Feit.
We have links to Primera's website on the cyber attack and helpful tips from the Identity Theft Resource Center at our website, alaskapublic.org. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a Juneau teacher is honored for her dedication in getting kids outdoors.
Being outside and seeing the natural world around us can really help kids formulate questions and hypothesize.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Condor Airlines, with nonstop service from Ted Stevens International Airport to Germany and beyond. More information available on condor.com. Condor, born to fly. The University of Alaska Southeast has more online learning programs than any other university in Alaska. UAS is a learning community where your professors are mentors and friends on campus and online. UAS.alaska.edu. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska Southeast.
The ground-based missile defense system, with its 26 missiles at Fort Greely, is capable of defending the U.S. not only from North Korea, but from Iran, too. That's what Missile Defense Agency Director James Searing told a Senate panel today.
The DIA's assessment is that Iran is capable of flight testing an ICBM in 2015. There is not a likelihood expressed with that assessment.
Sophisticated intercontinental ballistic missiles are likely to include decoys and countermeasures along with the warhead. Searing says to keep up with the threat, it needs a new radar system. In response to questions from Senator Dan Sullivan, Searing said he expects to choose an Alaska location for the long-range discrimination radar in the next few months.
We see North Korea and Iran continuing to progress.
Right.
In terms of not just the numbers of ICBMs they may have, but the complexity of what those threats may represent to us. And that's why the budget request this year is so important.
Yep.
That we get the radar built.
The agency has considered placing the radar in Shemya near the end of the Aleutian chain or at Clear off the Parks Highway. Sullivan asked about the system's electrical needs and whether Clear would need extra electrical generation. Searing said he couldn't discuss it publicly due to competitive concerns among the contractors bidding on the project. Fort Greely in the coming years is slated to receive 14 more missiles for a total of 40. Searing says it's possible even more missiles could be based there. A plaintiff in the lawsuit that successfully challenged environmental work proceeding a 2008 federal petroleum lease sale in the Chukchi Sea is opting out of the legal action. The native village of Point Hope says new drilling regulations will allow for safer Arctic Ocean exploration. Native Village President Jack Schaefer also says the village hopes to see economic benefits such as revenue sharing from offshore development. The village was one of 15 original plaintiffs and was listed as lead plaintiff. The others are environmental groups that may continue the lawsuit without Point Hope. The plaintiffs are waiting for the Interior Department to issue a final decision on the environmental review. If approved and if the process is not halted again by the lawsuit, Shell could then proceed with its permit application to return to the Chukchi this summer. A truck rollover on the southern end of the Dalton Highway resulted in a fuel spill. The Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation reports the tractor portion of the rig remained upright and the driver survived the Tuesday crash without serious injury. DEC on-scene coordinator Tom DeRider says responders have conducted preliminary work at the spill site north of the Yukon River crossing near mile 59.
They have removed the oil or the most of the oil from the tanker. They uprighted the tanker and got it removed from the highway.
The rider reports the damaged portion of the tanker operated by Tina Trucking was carrying 4,000 gallons of ultra-low sulfur diesel, but it will take some work to determine how much fuel was released in the accident.
The oil that was in the tanker and transferred to another truck is going up to Dead Horse. They're going to meter that off, and then they're going to meter whatever the residual was left in the tanker. And those two numbers together minus subtracted from what was originally put in the tanker will give us a spill volume. I'm not expecting that for a couple of days.
DeRider says contaminated snow, brush, and underlying soil will have to be removed from the spill site. Driving conditions have been especially tricky along several sections of the Dalton Highway with ice on the road. A second-grade teacher in Juneau is being honored for regularly exposing her students to nature. Outdoor education nonprofit Discovery Southeast is giving the first annual Discovery Award to Allie Smith. KTOO's Lisa Fu recently joined her class and has this story.
At least once a month, Auk Bay Elementary School teacher Allie Smith takes her second grade class outside to walk on the trail behind the school.
You have 8 minutes to do some observations. Go. Make sure you can see an adult the whole time.
The students run around the trail carrying journals to take notes and draw pictures. Each time Smith takes her students outside, she gives them a task. She's sent them on a hunt to find various colors in nature. Recently, she posed the question, is it winter or is it spring? Today, Smith lets her students come up with their own questions. She gives them an example. What would blueberry bushes look like right now? Some students have decided to focus on that question.
That part is called a bud. It's turning into green, right? So what would come out of that bud? What do you think?
A blueberry?
Okay, so draw what you see and then write down what you think.
Miss Smith, okay? Look.
After 8 minutes, Smith calls the students back into a group to see if they answered their own questions. She asks for volunteers to share.
My question was, will I find any pussy willows? We found the bushes, but we didn't find any.
Smith started teaching at Auk Bay 10 years ago and has always taken her students outside. She says nature can really hook students into learning.
I think it's really important for kids to get comfortable with being outside. And I also want to help foster that inquisitive attitude towards learning and nature. And I think that being outside and seeing the natural world around us can really help kids formulate questions and hypothesize.
Smith says different students have different feelings about nature. She has one student who was scared to go outside. Others think it's too much work. But she says these attitudes tend to change over the school year.
It kind of depends on what kids' exposure prior to coming to second grade and coming to the trail has been. I feel like the general trend that I've seen over the years is that the more kids come outside and do these activities, the more they notice and the more comfortable they feel.
Sean Isley says that's extremely important. Isley is executive director of Discovery Southeast. One of its programs sends naturalists into third through fifth grade classrooms for hands-on science lessons and field trips.
There's so many wild areas in Juneau that are right next to the schools, and so it's really easy to get kids out there. And also, by going through the classrooms, we get to reach all those kids who might not otherwise get outside.
Isley says Discovery Southeast received several nominations for the inaugural Discovery Award, which is meant to honor educators. Discovery Southeast will send Smith on one of its three teacher expeditions, which are continuing education classes. Smith has chosen to spend a week in the Juneau ice field. For the rest of the nature walk, Smith gets the class to be silent for a few moments, which, as you may imagine, is tough to accomplish with 22 second graders. They observe what sounds they hear. They check the outdoor temperature and then play a version of hide and seek, where some students are hawks.
I think I saw somebody green.
Before becoming a traditional classroom teacher, Smith got her undergraduate degree in outdoor education at Northland College in Wisconsin. She's always observed nature, but she says by bringing her students outside with her, she's taking an even closer look. In Juneau, I'm Lisa Fu.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Northern Air Cargo, providing freight transportation to 13 rural Alaska communities. NAC offers a variety of service options to get the freight where it needs to be safely. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956. The 2015 PFD filing season is here. If you have questions about your absences or someone you know away at college or serving in the military, the State of Alaska Department of Revenue encourages you to be proactive. Check out the absence guidelines before applying for your PFD. Visit pfd.alaska.gov and click on eligibility in the banner to learn more. The deadline to apply is March 31st. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska.
The Bethel City Council heard hours of passionate testimony Tuesday night, urging them to protest anticipated applications to sell liquor. Many in the capacity crowd asked the council to consider the consequences of local sales in a region that suffers disproportionate effects from alcohol abuse and related violence. KYUK's Ben Matheson has more.
More than 40 people spoke for over 3.5 hours at a public hearing, with many sharing personal stories about how alcohol has destroyed them or their families. All but a small handful urged the council to push back on businesses seeking to sell alcohol. Eva Malvich, who's worked to organize the Bethel Winter House homeless shelter and has lost family to alcohol, told the council that the community is not ready.
If we have a liquor store here, can you imagine the impact it would have on the people here with the services that you now offer? It cannot happen. You cannot take care of the problem if it's going to increase tenfold.
A Bethel Native Corporation subsidiary, Bethel Spirits, plans to apply for a packaged liquor store license for a store inside their Kabusevic facility, which was recently vacated by Omni Enterprises' Swanson store. The Alaska Commercial Company is also seeking a license to sell liquor. Anna Hoffman, president and CEO of BNC, asked for the council's support and made an economic case.
Bethel Spirits' ability to acquire a liquor license will provide the city with a mechanism to collect sales tax and facilitate control over legal alcohol sales. We all know the current situation in Bethel only perpetuates the rampant presence of illegal alcohol sales, and continuing to ignore that reality helps no one.
Hoffman says the proposed store would be located in the back of the upstairs area and take up less than 1% of the overall facility. If it advances, the store could be the first Bethel liquor store in four decades. Voters most recently in 2009 removed the local option law that prevented local sales and restricted imports. Citizens the next year in an advisory vote rejected five types of liquor licenses. The city council protested applications sent to the state Alcoholic Beverage Control Board, which then rejected them. The latest push for local sales comes shortly after the Bethel Native Corporation lost its tenant in their new $20 million facility. The companies haven't explained why the store failed in Bethel. Resident Darlene Mochin said that children may have to pay the price for what she believes is the poor business planning that ultimately led to the liquor store proposal.
I want you to think about the children that have no say-so when their parents are drunk and they can't sleep and they have to go to school and try to learn. But they're so tired they have to close their eyes and lay on their desks. And there's 11th graders are in school that only read the second grade level. We need to be accountable, and you're going to be accountable for what you vote on.
Bethel resident Bev Hoffman noted that problems surrounding alcohol are indeed very real, but proposed that the community work together to try something different.
Figure out how can we do this. A liquor store run by strict rules and regulations, in my opinion, can work. I'd rather see that money stay here. Keep the money we're spending elsewhere to help combat the alcohol problems here.
As no businesses thus far have applied for licenses, the council took no action. They have 60 days to protest if they choose, following notification of the application. Several people urged the council to sponsor a public vote before deciding on whether to protest the applications. The process could move too quickly. Mayor Rick Robb says it takes at least 90 days to organize an advisory vote. Councilmember Zach Fansler hoped that the companies seeking to open liquor stores would wait to hear from the community.
If they wish something like this to go through, is for them to hold off and to wait to submit their application until such time as we could have an advisory vote organized for the entire community. And that would be what I would ask them to do. I know that's not always possible, but it might be best for all parties involved.
BNC has said that they expect to submit their application in April. In Bethel, I'm Ben Matheson.
A study on violence reveals that 51% of women in the Nome census area have experienced intimate partner violence, sexual violence, or both in their lifetimes. KNOM's Francesca Fenzi has more.
Andre Rosé leads the University of Alaska Anchorage Justice Center team that conducted the study, which was supported by Kowarik Wellness and the Bering Sea Women's Group. Rosé says the study is the first of its kind in the Bering Strait region, going beyond Nome to include 15 neighboring communities. And the numbers are staggering. More than half of the women surveyed say that they've experienced specific acts of violence, either sexual or physical, during their lifetime.
What's even more shocking is when you think about the fact that that is a conservative estimate.
Rosé says the study, which was conducted using randomly selected phone numbers, excludes certain demographics. The survey results only included women who speak English and have a permanent address. Questions were also designed to be behavior-specific, meaning women were asked about certain examples of violent behavior, but not all possible behaviors. Additionally, Rosé says the survey doesn't account for the number of times a woman may have experienced violence in her life, only that she has experienced it. Despite its limitations, the survey revealed that roughly 1 in 2 women in the region have experienced some form of violence in their lifetime, and 1 in 10 have experienced violence in the past year.
So I think the conclusion that we've reached is that the level of violence against women is really unacceptably high, and that is true throughout Alaska in every single region.
Panunga Pangawi is the director of Kawerik's Wellness Program. She says the new data gives service providers an unprecedented tool to track and potentially treat domestic violence issues in the region. However, she acknowledges that the numbers are not easy to hear, and she's prepared for a variety of responses from community members, not all of them positive.
Anger is a very natural reaction to numbers like this. Anger is a very natural reaction to the behaviors, but in the overall picture, when we're looking to change things, it's so important to steer that anger in the right direction and use it as energy to address issues.
Pangawi says her own reaction to the numbers is mixed. As a provider who works to promote wellness in the region, she says she's relieved to see concrete data on the issue. But as a person who has experienced some of the behaviors listed in the survey, she also feels for women who took the survey and responded yes.
I feel empathy. And I feel hurt for them. And also I feel relieved because many times people don't speak about the hurts that have happened to them. And so to be on the phone and to have someone survey you and to have someone say, yes, I believe you, I'm sorry these things happened to you. I feel like, to me, if I had been on the phone and somebody said that to me, I would feel relieved. It would feel good to know that somebody cared.
Moving forward, both Pangawi and Rosé hope the numbers will serve as a touchstone for more open discussion of the issue.
I really hope that the numbers can be helpful to raise awareness, not just in Nome, but throughout Alaska. And we hope that that will generate some discussion about our next steps and what should we do to lower these rates.
Both Kawerik Wellness and the University of Alaska Anchorage Justice Center intend to use the survey as a baseline for future data gathering, with a follow-up survey planned for 2020. In Nome, I'm Francesca Fenzi.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can also follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Lisa Fu in Juneau, Ben Matheson in Bethel, and Francesca Fenzi in Nome. APRN's Alexander Gutierrez reported from Juneau and Liz Ruskin from Washington, D.C. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, an Alaskan company providing lifting and rigging products since 1983, on the web at arcticwirerope.com. Wells Fargo, proud supporter of APRN and dedicated to helping people reach their goals on and off the field. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far. And by Alaska Pipeline Service Company, Alaska's pipeline to the future, delivering oil today, sustaining operations for tomorrow. If you're ready to quit tobacco, Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line can help with free confidential coaching and support services through the telephone and online. Now introducing Text to Quit, a way to help you use medications correctly, manage urges, and prevent relapse all from your mobile phone. Call 1-800-QUIT now or visit alaskaquitline.com for more information. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Prevention and Control Program.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.